the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now we have Mary McKeown and Cal Thomas with us as ever, but I'm going to start with Scott Lucas, Professor of International Politics in UCD, because we've now had 10 consecutive nights of attacks by America on Iran. We have had the Iranians attacking more ships in the Strait of Hormuz. How bad is the situation now, as you'd see it, Scott?
I think it's the most serious position since that ceasefire was declared on April the 7th. We're not back at all-out war that we saw in the first 6 weeks, not only with, you know, these massive attacks, most of them inside Iran, but also Iran's retaliation across the Gulf. We're not back to the targeted assassinations of Iranian officials yet, but we're getting closer to that point. The U.S. attacks have now expanded beyond the south of Iran to move to other parts of the country. They are hitting non-military targets as well as military targets. And, of course, the Iranians are firing on vessels who tried to bypass the Strait of Hormuz pass the Strait of Hormuz without their permission. And they are causing significant damage in the Gulf states again.
But does Iran have the capacity, the capability to continue doing what it's doing, given that we've heard plenty of talk from Trump and the Americans about decimating its capacity?
Yeah, talk is talk. Reality is a different matter. Putting aside the fact that you haven't heard from the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, in almost 3 weeks, which is significant in itself, the U.S. intelligence services say that Iran retains about 70% of its missile capacity from before the war. It retains the majority of its drone capacity from before the war and the majority of its missile launch sites. And what we've seen in the last few days is that, you know, the Iranians can fire at least several missiles on each of the Gulf countries each day. They can fire dozens of drones, and they've seriously wounded almost 100 American personnel in the past week, as well as killing, of course, two in Jordan last Friday, and a third American being killed in Iraq from the detonation of an Iranian drone on Sunday.
Okay, so this is all very serious. And then for America as well, has it degraded its own military capacity? Has it used so many bombs that it now has reason to be worried about continuing its bombing missions? And where do you think is it at on using ground troops as possibly the only way to actually beat the Iranians?
Yeah, first of all, the U.S. military said before Trump decided to go into this war that there would be serious issues if it was a prolonged affair, not just with offensive capability, but there'd be serious issues with air defense interceptors. And so it has proved. There is reports which have come out in the past 72 hours that the Trump folks have considered expanding the war again, but that the military has repeated, we've got serious shortages. Now, I suspect some of those reports are coming from the camp of Vice President J.D. Vance, who was opposed to the war in the first place. But be that as it may, yes, I think the Americans have got serious limitations. The fundamental, Matt, remains the same, and this was the case in the start of April, when you either went into talks with the Iranians or you put in ground troops. At that point, the Trump folks declined to put in ground troops to force regime surrender, and they had to go into talks, and I think the same conditions apply here. 70% of Americans are against the war. I think an even higher number would be against it if ground troops went in. It would cause further global economic shocks with the effects, for example, on oil and gas prices, and there's no guarantee it would be a walkover.
But Mary McKeown, is Trump in an even worse situation in that he might like to walk away from what he has created, but that he can't do so while the Strait of Hormuz remains under Iranian control?
That kind of really is his biggest problem at the moment, and it's a problem that Marco Rubio pointed to. He said that this latest 10 days is just about reopening the straits and the US gaining back control of the straits from the Iranians. So it's an absolute mess, as Scott has just indicated. You have Trump, who I think would love to tomorrow just walk away from this whole thing. He is never going to get a deal that is going to surpass the deal that Obama got back in 2015. He will be looking lucky to get anything approaching that at this stage. But in the meantime, as has just been said, the US weapon supply is being depleted. The Iranians aren't looking down the barrel of midterms in 100 days' time. We saw the latest polling for Trump, just 29% of Americans, and his MAGA base is so rock solidly loyal to him, but only 29% of Americans polled approve of how he's handling this war. That is a dismal figure for him. We see the price of gas is going up again and petrol in America. And most worryingly now, it looks like the Houthis are going to join this war effort. And if they do get involved enough, if they do a similar blockade, you've got two ways. Well, the only way for the Saudis to get their oil out is through the Bab al-Mandeb Strait. And that is the one that is, it goes down the waterway at the, and it leads to the Gulf of Aden at the very top. So that's how the Saudis get their oil out at the moment. Now, if the Houthis decide that they're going to do their own blockade there, they don't even have to do a whole lot. They just have to find a few missiles to lob, and that will then seize that up. And then you're going to see the price of petrol and gas really soaring, and that's going to be an even bigger headache for Donald Trump. Pete Hegseth is going to be up on Capitol Hill today. I don't envy him. He's looking for about $67 billion immediately for funding for this war, and he's going to have to finally ask some questions, because he has been pretty well AWOL for weeks now, apart from faffing around about testosterone levels. And I think that, you know, he's going to have to sit there before the Appropriations Committee, and he's going to have to take their questions and explain exactly what's going on and why America is in the mess it's in at the moment.
Let's hear a little bit before we go to Cal of Donald Trump answering questions at the Oval Office on Iran within the last hour.
There are no signs that Iran is ready to stop fighting. So what is the plan? Is the plan to just keep bombing until they give up?
Why do you know something that I don't know?
Well, they continue to attack our allies and kill
Americans. You don't know what the dialogue is behind the scenes, that they want to meet desperately to try and end it because they're getting decimated. You don't get that when you listen to your fake station, but you don't know. You don't know anything.
So what, talks are
you know
still
something
possible,
that I don't know? Do you know something I don't know?
Well, tell us.
I will tell you. They want to desperately meet, and until they're ready to meet in a meaningful way, we have no interest in even.
Okay, Cal Thomas, given all the stuff we've been hearing from Trump for months now in relation to this, can we believe him when he says that the Iranians are desperate to negotiate?
No. And not only can we not believe him, Matt, I think that history shows that any agreement that Iran has entered into, they have violated. And they violated the Memorandum of Understanding. They believe, as I have repeatedly said on this program, that they have a religious mandate to wipe out Israel and to come after the great Satan, the United States. That's what they say. Their behavior underscores that. And I just saw a report in the New York Post this morning, quoting Israeli intelligence. They believe that Iran has moved its nuclear materials inside the Pickaxe Mountain site last year. So Iran was already anticipating what is occurring right now. That Oval Office meeting, by the way, was with the president of Lebanon. And there's some speculation going on that Trump may have asked the president of Lebanon what America could do to help root out Hezbollah, which, of course, is one of Iran's proxies that has occupied southern Lebanon for decades. So we'll see what comes out of that. But no, I don't think the president is right when he says that that Iran is begging for a peace deal. If they were, they would have by now.
And do you trust Israeli intelligence anymore? Because it would seem that Israeli intelligence brought Trump to the stupidity of his initial actions against Iran. And that intelligence does not seem to have been particularly accurate.
Well, the alternative, Matt, would have been for Iran to get a nuclear weapon. I don't think there's any question about that. There is no equanimity here between any negotiators in Iran, any negotiators in Israel, any negotiators in the United States. They were, in my judgment, and the judgment of many others, by the way, not just me, on the way to producing a nuclear weapon would have changed everything in the Middle East. Iran with a nuclear weapon would have used it if they wanted to and thought it could achieve their ends.
Okay, well, that's a contentious one. I'm not sure about that. But give us solutions, Cal. Should America send ground troops in? Because it's starting to look like that's the only way you can actually beat the Iranians.
Every other war in which the United States has been involved, Matt, has included ground troops. That's not going to happen before the November election. I can almost predict that with accuracy. But I would like to know what the strategy. One of the problems is that Trump talks too much, in case you haven't noticed. He puts everything out there of what he's going to do, what he intends to do, what he wants to do. And as several retired military people have said on our cable networks here, that is the wrong way to fight a war. You don't tell people in advance what you're going to do. You just go ahead and do it. But I think the legitimate question from that reporter in the soundbite you played is, okay, what's the plan here? If you're putting out all this stuff, what's the end game? Is it just to open the Strait of Hormuz? Is it to remove the fanatics from leadership in Iran? What is the goal? We knew what the goals were during World War II. We were going to defeat the Nazis and the Imperial Emperor of Japan. That was the goal. It was a stated goal by Franklin Roosevelt and our allies. We don't have a stated goal right now, or it keeps changing.
And just to finish this section, Scott Lucas, I'll go back to you. Do you think it's possible that once the November midterm elections are out of the way, that Trump will then commit ground troops to try to sort out the situation in Iran?
No, and I don't think we're going to get to November without the United States going back to the table with the Iranians. Now, whether that happens within days or weeks, we'll see. But it's important to put out some facts to establish why that is. First of all, the Iranians didn't violate the Memorandum of Understanding. The issue that has led to the recent clashes is that the Memorandum of Understanding gives Iran management of the Strait of Hormuz. Now, the final system is to be worked out within 60 days under that. But what happened is that the Trump camp wanted to back out of the deal, effectively. And Donald Trump signed it initially without consulting his advisors. That's why they tried to run ships through the Strait of Hormuz without Iranian permission. The second key fact to put out there is that we had an agreement in place that did limit Iran's nuclear program. That was the 2015 nuclear agreement, which Iran did observe until Donald Trump ripped it up in 2018. And even in 2026, Iran did not have a nuclear weapon, and it was not on the verge of a nuclear weapon. The irony here is that because of, you know, before February 28th, the Strait of Hormuz was free to all shipping. There was no question of whether or not tankers could get through or not. Secondly, Iran was negotiating on its nuclear program, including renewed limits in its nuclear program with the Trump administration, and they had said they were not going to pursue a nuclear weapon. So the U.S. now is in a worse political position now than it was on February 26th. And it concluded those talks, and 2 days later went to war.
Scott Lucas, Professor of International Politics at UCD, thank you. Cal Thomas and Mary McKeown have stayed with us. Cal, I noticed that at the World Cup final on Sunday evening, the Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney is there sharing the stage with Donald Trump in the presentations. And then within 2 days, more tariffs on certain Canadian goods. Is Trump ever going to give up this obsession with tariffs?
No, I don't think so. And I just think it's the wrong way to do things. And by the way, let me just throw in a line about the World Cup. This is one of the greatest things to happen to the United States in modern times. Not only did it bring in $50 billion in income, but it brought a lot of players, coaches, fans, people from European and other countries who got to see America as it is, not like a lot of the foreign media cover us. Some of the interviews with the players were astounding. They just talked about American food. They talked about air conditioning. Hello, France. They talked about freedoms. They talked about so many positive things that you never hear from the critics. Now, with respect to the Canadians, this all came out of these forest fires that have brought smoke into the northern and eastern part of the United States. I think this is an overreaction, and sometimes tariffs have their place, but in this case, I think it was a mistake. I'm reminded of the 2003 U.S. boycott of French goods. You may remember that. Americans boycotted French wine, cheese, and water because France opposed the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq at the time. And that didn't really change anybody's mind about anything. It made for something called freedom fries instead of French fries, but mostly it was jokes of late-night comedians.
Yeah, but Cal, can I just go back to the World Cup for a second? You know, I know America seems to think that it has run the best World Cup ever, but actually outside of America, football fans do not think that.
Well, that's fine. They're happy. They're perfectly welcome to feel as they do. I can only tell you as an American what I feel. I've become a soccer fan. I was thrilled to watch some of these teams from other countries, which I had not seen before because I had not been a fan of soccer. And I think it was one of the few things that for a while united this country and united much of the world. I hope they come back in future years. I certainly am going to be watching them if the time zones allow me to when they're played in other countries.
Okay, Mary McCone, what did you make of America's hosting of the World Cup? And then, in particular, what was inflicted on us in the final by FIFA, presumably at the urging of the Trump administration, things like a Super Bowl-type halftime show and lots of other nonsense.
Well, I think on the halftime show, I think Wayne Rooney said it best. I just thought it was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it was just so unnecessary, so stupid, so cheesy. Oh, you know, don't get me started. I already have. On the plus side, however, Matt, as you know, I've never been a big football fan. I have become one. I partly agree with you, Cal. I do not agree with you that the foreign media in the States, of whom I was one for many years, only write negative things about America. I think we've all written about what a wonderful country it is and how terrific the American people are, how friendly, how welcoming. So I think you can see both sides of that. I think a lot of people who visited for the World Cup probably experienced a lot of wonderful things, including the breathtaking scenery. But I think that there was a lot of other stuff as well. Let's not forget the treatment of the Saudi referee and the
Somalian referee.
The Somalian, I beg your pardon, referee, and the almost strip searching of players from African countries on the tarmac, which was completely unnecessary, and a number of other things. As for the Trump-Infantino bromance, I mean, it's just embarrassing. And Trump prancing around on the stage is like, take a hint, you know, really. I mean, it was just laughable. You would feel sorry for him if he wasn't so thoroughly repugnant in the way that he tries to overtake everything and make it about him. You know, a couple of days earlier at the NATO summit, he's yelling about how we're cutting off all trade with Spain. They can't even visit America, apparently. And then he's cozying up to them. But I also thought it was really churlish and ungracious. There were three hosts of the World Cup. It wasn't just America. It was also Canada and Mexico. And the way he was hogging, only he could put on the medals, and it was all about him. There were two co-hosts that he completely ignored. I thought that was pretty disgusting.
Okay, but you've noticed as well, Cal.
Yep. Wait, I got to tell you, one of the many reasons I love Marion is she always looks for a dark cloud within a silver lining.
Well, Cal, can I say to you, I'll give you a silver lining on the dark cloud. I thought it was wonderful the way the Spanish airbrushed him out of the official photographs afterwards of the presentation and lifting of the trophy by the squad.
Right.
And it made me wonder, could we perhaps, when this is all over, airbrush Trump out of every photograph and every bit of video footage and audio and try and pretend this has never happened?
Well, of course, this is what the old Soviet Union used to do. The leaders would stand on Lenin's tomb, and if a former leader was out of favor, they would airbrush him out of the picture. Nothing new about that. Look, Trump still has, in my view, has done some very good things. Is he an egomaniac? Yes. Is he a narcissist? Yes. Does he use foul language? Yes. Is he different probably from any other president we've had? Yes. I was for Rubio in 2016. I hope he runs again in 2028. I think he's knowledgeable. I think he's articulate. I think he's a classic guy. He's a serious Roman Catholic. He's got a lot of good things going for him. I'm not a J.D. Vance fan. I hope Rubio runs and wins, and I think that would be a totally different presidency than we've seen for 8 years with Donald Trump.
I'm just going to go back in your list of Donald Trump there. You forgot that he has been found civilly liable of sexual assault against a woman and has had to pay and has made a payment of over $5 million, which I think is very significant about him as well. Marion, what about his Air Force One from Qatar? A lot of people said at the time when he took this donation that there would be security issues. And I know that his poison dwarf has been posting photographs last month about being on Air Force One, how much she loved it. But it does seem to be, doesn't it, not necessarily up to standards.
Well, it seems that they focused a lot more on the renovation and the gold leafing and all the rest of it, all the fancy stuff, and didn't think about the very serious security issues and security concerns around it. What really kind of bugs me about this is there are two new planes on order. Yes, they're taking a long time. And yes, you know, there is a need for a new plane or at least an upgraded plane at this stage as Air Force One. But Trump is going to take this with him when he goes. So the American taxpayers are now paying probably hundreds of millions, who knows? knows how much they're going to pay. There was one fee that put it at about $1 billion, one estimate, for all these upgrades. But he's going to take it with him. He's going to hightail it down to Florida, use it, I don't know, for his personal use or put it in his library or whatever. The American people are paying for something that should belong to the American people, and it should never have been taken from the Qataris in the first place. It was such a grift. It was such an embarrassing thing for a US president to do. And now, of course, it turns out that it's not even fit for purpose.
Thank you very much, Marion McKeown and Cal Thomas.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.